is this topic of impacting our generation with the gospel. And he already said that, and we're going to have some open discussion. And this really, as y'all remember, came up this late summer and then during the fall. It's come up several times. So it's on our hearts, and we want to let God speak to us. But when we think about that impacting our generation, I'm not used to this. This is a small amount of space to work with, but it'll do. It's good. But both it implies to impact our generation corporately and individually, right? We have to see it both ways. We don't just go assign that to somebody else. Well, why don't you three guys go impact this generation with the gospel? It's individual, right? It's all of us, wherever we are. It's you in your life, what God has, where you live, who you work with. But I'm sure there's times, maybe very often, maybe not so, but there are probably times when you're thinking to yourself, with this society so far gone, do I really influence anybody? Sometimes it can be pretty hopeless. It seems that we're thinking, man, I'm one in against many that don't even have any fear of God, no love of the truth, no sight, eyes to see anything properly. Well, I know that if you think that, it's probably true of the brother sitting next to you. And it may be something you feel more when you're at work, or you may feel it more in society when you're just around extended family or some sort of a social event. Or you may just feel it in daily life. You're in a restaurant or a store and you hear the music playing or the way people talk. So it is real that you may struggle with that, wondering, hey, is my life really going to impact this generation? And the answer is yes, it does. It has to for the Christian. I mean, it's absolutely a part of being a Christian. Some of us feel like my impact is this much, but where our lives are His, they're not our own. So can Philip's life, through the power of the Holy Spirit, make an even greater impact on others? Absolutely. So we're not here in these hours to just come up with these corporate strategies. We're here to be vessels set apart by God, where the wind of God or the Holy Spirit has us. So may it be an encouragement to you. The Christian life is visible. It's public. It's private, all right, in that you have your times alone, but it's a public faith, right? I mean, I'm stating the obvious. The other day in God's providence before the prayer meeting, it was the day that Krista was going to keep the three P-boys, as I call them, Janae's boys. And I left work early enough I can meet him, and we all, you know, they were there. We were going to meet somewhere for a light dinner, and boom, I walk in and get to be with him. And when it came time to leave, we're in two vehicles. Pacer, which is the 9-year-old, decided to ride with me. And he has a real tender, seemingly conscience. I think he may have truly been converted. He has to the truth. He wants to talk with me and share. So he's in the back seat and I'm the front seat. And we're asking me about certain men. Would they be a Christian, Pops? And I said, I don't know, Pacer. I said, let me ask you. How would you know if somebody's a Christian? What would be the first thing that you think of? Tell me, what do you... He said, they would say so. Because couple of the men he brought up, I said, I've never heard them say that they're a Christian. And I said, that's right. They would say that Jesus Christ has rescued them from sin. So they would have a testimony. I said, then what else would happen? Their lives would be marked by the change. They don't love sin anymore. Do they still sin? Yes, they wrestle against it, but they don't love it. It's not their master. They don't want to go the way of sin. They want to love God. They want to be holy. And we just had we're talking about 3-4 minutes together like that. And he was listening, and it was just really a precious moment together. So it is visible. One of the great men of the Old Testament is Daniel. Your nephew has the middle name Daniel, right? So turn to the book of Daniel. It's okay if I say one of the great men, right? Is it all right? They were men, and God made them great. John Talek, right? God did it. Christ does it. So Daniel impacted his generation. Is that kind of a mild way of putting it? Did he ever? What does Daniel have to do with us? A lot. A lot. He was a devoted man of God. Let me talk about the cards stacked against him. I mean, he's in a completely foreign, godless people. And he was a man of principle. You know what I mean by a man of principle? A man of conviction or a man of conscience? He was a man of conscience and principle. And it is actually refreshing today in our day, isn't it, to meet men that are men of principle, men of devotion. It's, you know, when you never know what you have in your coming up business trip. But God'll let you meet men in our day, or you read about men, and it, you know, it was a couple years ago I brought those Jonathan Edwards resolutions, and we read some of them. Men of principle, men of devotion. And so, brothers, this is all about us and God using us to impact our generation. We need to be yielded vessels, believing God to do it for his name's sake. So in the first chapter of Daniel, we see this beginning story or this beginning truth about Daniel being a man of devotion and a man of impact. It's remarkable. We just go from this story and then this event and then this event as you go through each of the chapters. But several weeks ago, I began to feel like speaking on Daniel would be just a special thing to share with us together. And I think it ties into some of the deep truths that we want to, or topics that we would like to share with you men. And maybe it'll stimulate conversation after I finish this evening. We can see some things from Daniel's life. He was marked by this as a young man. Quentin is what, 17 now? Daniel was taken into captivity at roughly that age. It only lasted 7 months, right? Captivity? No, just 7 years, right? I mean, you only had to do it 7 years. 70 years of captivity. He wasted his life because he was in captivity. None of those things are true, right? Any of you guys could say, stop, Philip, that's not true. And yet we do that. I mean, you got a lousy job, you got a lousy boss, you're not living in the right neighborhood, not traveling with the right companion, right? Wait a minute, God's order, he's orchestrated this thing. Every now and then in just professional kind of work, we get clients and difficulties, and I have to say, wait a minute, God has this, he's a sovereign over this. You get tough customers. You know, it's just, we've got to let God have us, you know, use us. So Daniel is this man of tremendous devotion. Devotion to God always equals God's glory and satisfaction that he has, no matter what our circumstances. We don't look at the score sheet. We don't just get to the end and say, well, did I live for the right thing? Devotion to God at any day, in any culture, in any governmental system, socioeconomic, it's always for the glory of God. It's always the winning way, if you want to put it that way. So that's what we should be about. So I want us to go back to chapter 1. We're going to go through it in pieces. This is not intended to be a preaching time, just a teaching and sharing, and again, to stimulate us in a fresh yieldedness as God's vessels. There are four scenes, and I'm going to ask four questions because I want us to ask them. I don't want us to be as much about worried about Daniel, though we're going to learn from him. I want us to take it and see apply it to us. So there are four scenes and four questions that I want us to relate to the day we're in. Scene number one, Daniel chapter 1, first two verses. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem, and he besieged it, took them captive, as God had said he would eventually do to his people. And they were captives now by Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 2, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. Scene number one, what about the culture that we live in? What do we learn from Daniel? What about the culture we live in? Right? Things are, I promise you, things are worse now in general society than when I was a teenager or in my 20s in college days. Things in society, Ron and I could visit, Mac and I, we could just say, if we were trying to generalize things, where are things worse? Now, part of that is we see it more clearly because of the grace of God in our life. But things that are really just normal today, shacking up and living with somebody, I'm just going to use that as one of those, was not normal and okay in society in the 1970s. It happened. It's always happened, but it wasn't okay. The point being, the culture gets worse, more evil, hearts are more and more wicked, and yet, brothers, that's the day we're in. So what about the culture we live in? Well, what about the culture of Daniel and his friends? They went from instant a people that were around the law of God, the truths of God, and instantly, in one captivity, one event of being taken captive, they are completely surrounded and held by a pagan culture. So the whole scene here that we're going to begin to go through is set, God has set it, that there's going to be a series of pagan kings to rule over God's people. And Daniel and the other three, they're going to go through a series of events over decades. And God says in his word, he gave Jehoiakim into his hand. God set it up. This is an awesome thought. God set it up. Our president, who is completely just, who knows what's coming next, God's got him in that place. Okay? That's the truth. The culture we're in, the culture that Daniel was in, is the culture that God has said, walk with me in. That's where we are. It is God's plan. And it's God's purpose. We're not saying that God's the author of sin. None of that. But the day that we're in, the day that we're held captive in, if we want to put it that way, is the day that God said, walk with me. That's what he tells us to do. Be about my glory and my name. And so Daniel is in this day of captivity surrounded by now the way of the Chaldeans, the way of these pagan people, wicked people. But think about it, if the culture of Daniel, the culture in the society of Daniel that he's now in is ordained of God, it makes us step back and go, well, God always does these things. He always appoints the day for his servants. Joseph going to Egypt seems like one of the worst deals that any brother has ever got, ever, and God used it for immense redemptive glory and good. Incredible. Esther as the queen, how in the world does that happen? Where she becomes the queen. It's just God did it for his name's sake, that she would be a vessel, right, unto God. See this, brothers? This is about how we can view our day. Daniel in Babylon, here in these days, in this wicked king and other kings. Paul in prison, where he wrote letters full of God's Spirit writing these letters, building up the saints. John on the island of Patmos. You just go through history, and then we could pick up post-scripture, and we could talk about this servant, and this servant, and this servant. I mean, they're not just cruising along happy and, you know, carefree. They're servants of God in their generation. And therefore, the culture or the people and the customs that are around us, God has us to impact. That's the reality of these things. And as I said earlier, Daniel's going to spend the next 70 years of his life in a pagan culture with customs and practices, and we just have to conceptualize the way that they would have lived would have been their dress code, their lingo, their idols. It just goes on and on and on. And Daniel would walk with God as one of the great men of the Old Testament in spite of that. You talk about God being with him. It's like when we read Joseph's life, in the hand of God, or God was with Joseph in prison, and God was with Joseph. It says it three or four or five times in those chapters, and God was with him. So, beloved, Daniel was there for God's purpose. Daniel was there in season. There are times in your life where you wonder, what is going on in the day I'm in? What's going on at work? What's going on with things? And And we just got to take away tonight from Daniel fresh encouragement of what this story tells us. There's no reason for us to say, if I could have only lived in this time period. There's no reason to ever say that again if we've said that. Things could have been better, or my gifts or my life could have been used better. Don't go there. Don't go there. You're in the day that you're in. Rami is with us here for the will of God now, and he, as we see it, there's big things ahead, but we got to let God orchestrate that, right? I mean, there is no wasted time. What God has Rami to be here for him to receive and give to all of us, is what God has. He can't go home and look at his calendar and get frustrated that things aren't happening fast enough. God's in it. There is no wasted time with God. You can miss an airplane and be at an airport. There's no accident in that. God's in it. So we have to realize our life, all that we are, is in his plan. We don't have to change anything. Scene number two. Let's pick it up, verse 3. So they've been taken captive. Nebuchadnezzar has taken some of these vessels of the Israelites. And now the king begins to declare how they're going to live. And the king spake unto Aspenaz, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. So he brings the Hebrew guys, and he brings and mixes these different ones, and he brings them. And they gather them. Children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science. How about that, Josh? And such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning of the tongue of the Chaldeans. Verse 5. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. Going to change their names, right? For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. Stop there. Question number two. All right, you're in a pagan culture. We live in a day that's godless so much around us. What about the pressure to conform? What about the pressure to conform? The king's demanding these certain things here. We don't have people necessarily demanding it, though you may have employment places and things that around you that get to be pretty heavy-handed. But this pressure to conform, that's the second question. What about the day we're in? What about the culture we're in? What about the pressure? How are we to view that? How are we to walk in it? How do these men walk in it? Well, look what's happening here. Do you ever feel like somebody's trying to mold you? You know what I'm saying? When I say conform, they're trying to get you to be like them. You're probably thinking, yeah, I feel up like 2 days ago, this week. I mean, the pressure is all around us. Be this way, talk this way, dress this way, etc. So do you ever feel that pressure? I mean, you just take a quick glance at secular news, social media pieces here and there, read a column. Every now and then I'll read a column in the Star-Telegram because our office gets that newspaper, and I can read some things that I can see every now and then. I can just get, in a sense, a pulse of what's going on. Or if you glance at a TV every now and then, you're going to see just one after another things in our culture that are trying to conform people to a certain way of thinking. And it's coming right at you too, right? The pressure to conform, to go with the flow, to be like everybody else. Don't worry about the people at Providence Village. They're all okay. That Baptist church is taking care of them. They're fine. Don't worry about the people in my office or that you work with. Don't worry about the people down in the park in Denton or wherever. Don't worry about, don't worry. Let everybody be their own, right? This pressure to not think towards mankind with any kind of redemptive heart. It's all around us. In fact, they want to brand the Christians as though you're the ones going around hating everybody. That's the antithesis of what the Christian ethic is about. If it ever comes across that way, God, help us. We're not about hating. We're about loving people. But we're not to be conformed. It's all the time. Your children, your families, you know, my kids, my grandkids, think it's all around them, this thing of conforming. The kings of our day that want to conform us. I mean, how can we impact our generation if they're trying to mold us into something else? Romans 12:2, be not conformed to this world. What's the second part of that? That's right. You talk about, but ye transform, right, by the renewing of your mind. That gets to the essence of it. We are not to be pressed into the mold of this society. Mr. Trump, social media guy on the radio, Oprah's, her day that she had. We're not to be shaped by them. God's the one who shapes all that we think about, all that we are, how we live. We are not conformed. Daniel was not conformed. We learn from these young men that they were men of principle and devotion. They faced it at an extraordinary level. We can't even comprehend the amount of pressure. Their lives hung in the balance. And nobody's going to pray. We get a few chapters. Nobody prays to their God. We hadn't faced that yet. We might. Now note, the king wanted the choicest young men to serve him. That's what he's doing here. The king wants to get, the hand-picked, the really ones with a lot of promise. But he doesn't want to leave them like they are. I'm sure if we just stopped and we said, we're going to talk about different experiences where you've had in your pursuit of work or training or college, where you had somebody who wants to shape the way you think. I can promise you, college professors don't like independent, sound Christian thinkers. Even my dad would say, you got that right. They don't. The culture says, we're the teachers, you're to be taught. Everything we say, you take verbatim. Wait a minute here. Wait a minute, Nebuchadnezzar. Wait just a second here. The king wanted the choicest ones to serve him. So he has Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, go get the young Hebrew men, the quality guys. What's going to happen with that? Who's going to impact who? Now, notice, brothers, the king aims to conform these Jewish men in certain ways. This is where it gets really down to the techniques or the culture. Okay? It's one thing to know we're in a pagan culture. It's another thing to know that we're being pressures coming our way, messages, teachings, thinking, free thinking, no definition of male, female, and all the other garbage of our day. But it's another thing when then it gets put upon them as requirements. I would be fascinated to hear from a few of you men through your careers at your work what your employers have tried to implement where it's required of every employee. You'll face things. It just happens. Conformance. Come on now. Get along with this. That's what they say. Number one, he tries to reprogram their minds. Look at verse 4. In whom they might teach the learning of the tongue of the Chaldeans. He wanted them to stand in the king's palace and that they would learn the ways of the Chaldeans, right? The way of the king's people. The learning and the tongue, right, of the Chaldeans is what he's saying. He's dealing with what they think and what they say. This is to me is profound to take a fresh look at this. Do you ever feel this? It was an attempt by the king, by that culture, by those people, to brainwash them to think and talk a different way. To change the way we think. To become Babylonians in the way they thought, the way they viewed things, their worldview. What is your worldview, right? To change your worldview. None of us at any age are protected. It's not like it doesn't come our way. Sometimes it's your parents that don't know the Lord, right? And they want you to think a certain way. Sometimes it's just a guy that you knew in high school. Who knows? Sometimes it's a coworker. and they want to change, they want to reprogram the way you think. How can we impact our generation if we're being pressed into somebody else's? We can't. If we're getting impacted by the way they think. So here's the king, he's going to brainwash them. He wanted to purge their minds of God. Oh yeah, your Christianity stuff. I mean, you can, I guess society would probably say, yeah, you can love people, just don't, you can't talk to them about the gospel. As though those, one cancels out the other. If you love somebody, it is the greatest thing to talk to them about, right? It is the truth. So to purge their minds of their God, to make them learn new things and new ways of seeing the world, and even their language. I suspect with you men, at times people just stop and just listen to the way you say something or communicate something, and they're blown away. They just don't hear anybody talk like that, right? They just don't even. One of the messages I had on the elevator, because this was the end of a work day, so I still get into the late evening, I still get messages related to vocational work. By tomorrow, I'll be free. I won't be getting most of those. But I got one on the elevator from one of the senior guys. It was this big pursuit and a big project. It's almost a game changer for this sector of business. And the note said that it was an attached letter from an attorney that the team was not selected. I was not a part of that, per se. I gave support to the pursuit. But I saw it. And my note back to him, because he's a dear guy, my note back was, God gave grace, or God was with the effort, but God rules. God rules. Trust me. In the A&E business, there are not many people that summarize a win or a loss like that. It's just, that's not the way they think. They don't view it as that God is on the throne, that God rules. You see, if they're going to change the way we think, then we're not going to have any impact on anybody. The way we think and what we talk about becomes full of gospel sanctification and gospel reality. I mean, we have to live a certain way, brothers, if we're going to impact this generation. We don't just go out and do big programs and events. We walk with God wherever you are. You guys fixing appliances and meeting people. You guys are in more business or technology. Your science area, your physics or quantum physics, whatever it is, God has to own it. This is not something that we just add on to our church. It's who we are. It's how we live. It's what we love. It's what we are, what we're about. I mean, our culture wants us to shut up. Right? They don't want Christians because their conscience is being convicted. The truth convicts them. But we can't hold back to purge their minds and change their worldview and change their language. I went to the grocery store. Y'all heard me talking about that recently when I was in college. Man, those guys wanted me to become like them. I was just really plain Jane guy, already married, and then I had a little boy going to college, and they're thinking, man, you're not with it. You need to come and be like us. So it's not a certain age. It's not just 13 and 14-year-olds or 17-year-olds or 21-year-olds. It's every age throughout society. It's real. So let us not lose sight of this. First, this thing of reprogramming how we think. Guys, just because you're around pagan bosses or pagan coworkers, it does not mean that you compromise at all on your handling and living the truth. Right? Second, he tries to change their lifestyle. Go back to verse 5. Wasn't this kind? The king appointed them daily provision. Now, there's a lot of commentary on this because Daniel would have been coming out of a Jewish people, right? With laws and requirements and dietary things. We don't even need to chase that. This truth here is not about you changing a diet or keeping a diet. That's not what the truth is. This is about being changed into a be like a certain people. That's the bigger truth here. Their king, Nebuchadnezzar, at this point, that king, was changing the way they think, the way they talk, what their customs are. I've been to a lot of company events through my career where I didn't partake of certain beverages and certain activities, and then I bring my wife with me, and you're talking about some senior, and Mac knows a couple of the men that were in the former firm, and they would, and you're there and you're in that setting. How do you walk with God in that? You walk with him. You walk according to your heart, your conscience. But changing their lifestyle, I mean, he wants to indulge them in the delicacies of the king's table, right? Could have been pork. Yeah, okay. It says it's wine. Well, the Old Testament didn't forbid him to have some wine, but it's more the general thing. You're going to be like us. You're going to do the things we do. I was working through Ephesians years ago, I think it was, and I took two books on Lloyd-Jones with me to a conference in Corpus Christi. And at the end of the conference activities, you know, people go out. They want to go out and have fun, whatever they do. We'll put quotes, right, fun. And one of the guys who was a client said, "You going to go with us tonight?" And I said, "No, I'm going to go back to the hotel. I'm going to read. I need to study." And at 9 o'clock, I'm in my hotel room taking notes, reading Lloyd-Jones' sermons, thinking, I'm so blessed to have such mercy in my life. I don't want to be out there. I don't want to be out there. I mean, there would be times to speak to them and share things with them, but at that moment, it was about me walking in my own conscience. I mean, the king wants the king, and America wants us to eat their way, talk their way, act their way. The King Nebuchadnezzar, wanted Daniel and them to be immersed in the way of the Chaldeans. I don't think I know one of the young pop singers now. I thought about that recently. I thought, now, wait a minute, am I so far gone, disconnected? And I thought, well, number one, my age says one thing, but I'm not interested in that. I'm just not interested in it. And from the standpoint of, I need what will edify me and build me up, right? So this thing of being immersed, it's real. I'm not taking cheap shots at any singer or actor or writer. I'm just being honest about it. I don't have to be up with the latest thing. I don't need to adapt to the culture. In God's providence, this whole event with the diet, the king's meat and drink, it sets up the first real conflict in the book of Daniel. Just over food and beverage. And yet it's bigger than that. The victory of God, the triumph of God's name and his ownership of his men rest on this very thing and how Daniel walks in it. So that's the second thing that the king is trying to conform them to. First, reprogram our minds and our talk. Second, change your lifestyle. Third, we're just going to change your name. Abraham, Daniel, no, that's not good. We're not going to leave that name. That has Hebrew. That has the God of Abraham and Isaac to it. We're not going to keep that. I mean, it even comes down and made me think nicknames people get at work or whatever. People want to change your identity. I know that seems like a real subtle thing. The king tries to eradicate their heritage as God's men, the lineage of God. Verse 7, the prince of the eunuchs gave them names. A Jewish name was symbolic, right? And here the king is essentially intending to blot out the heritage of their Jewish name. The name was a very significant thing to these young men, the way they were raised. And now, in the king's purpose, he's going to change their name, or at least try to reflect pagan mysticism. So we're, you know, it's just progressive here. What the whole, you know, we're going to, you talk about being conformed or having pressure put on you. This man, Nebuchadnezzar, is trying to do the whole package with these men. You think you and I have pressures? Daniel's name meant God is my judge. Belteshazzar meant keeper of the hidden treasures of Bel. That's a nice change, isn't it? We'll forget the living God. Hananiah, it meant the grace of the Lord. Changed it to Shadrach, the inspiration of the sun. Mishael, he that is strong, he that is a strong God, essentially what his name meant. Meshach, the goddess of Shaq, not the former basketball player. The goddess of Shaq, though people today. You know, you ever pick up storylines of people, pop singers or maybe an athlete. They actually change their name. They're so caught up in it. There it is, right? Stuff like that. Yeah, Muhammad Ali. Then he went with, I am the greatest. What a blasphemy, year after year. So here these men are, the king's attempt to conform them and change them. And how about Azariah? The Lord is a help. What a beautiful meaning to a name. To Abednego, which means servant of the shining fire. There's some slight variations that you'll see in your research on these names. But so we have keeper of the hidden treasures, the inspiration of the sun, the goddess of Shack, and the servant of the shining fire. Where is the God of Abraham and Isaac in any of that? Think about that. My dad asked me the other night, getting off the line with him, how's little John Silas doing? I think, wait a minute, John Silas. Oh, that's my grandson. John Silas. I just grinned and I thought, the name means something, right? It does mean something. And God had these men and they had the heritage of truth, and here they are being pressed about, just like we in our own kind of way, that we ought to be changing the way we think, change the way we talk, change what we partake in, your food, dress, drink, whatever, and change the way our names represent. So they're first captives in the pagan culture, and second, all this pressure to conform. It'll help us, re-strengthen us on where we are in our day and how to walk and how to just yield ourselves to, as God's instruments for what's ahead. It helps us to talk to our young people, our children. You know, when I said Sunday to the young people, when sinners entice you, consent not. If anything they left with, a 12-year-old or a 16-year-old in the room left with the other day, Sunday, hear what I said. It's God saying it. It's not me. I'm just quoting. When sinners entice thee, but brothers, that's for us. That's for Philip. When I go back to work on Monday, and sinners entice thee, consent thou not. I can tell you there were owners of the firm that I used to work for would have loved to see Philip and Christy get intoxicated and leave a Christmas party for that company. They would have loved it. Because they would have viewed it as, there, we're finally getting to do what we do. It's real. There are people who want you to walk a certain way. And yet, when we walk with humility, walk with God, who knows how you're impacting that generation? Brothers, this is real. We need to let this be foundational on how we walk. Third scene. Let's go to the third scene, verses 8 through 16. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. See, to him it was an issue of conscience. Verse 9. Mac had that verse he loved in 2 Chronicles. How about this one? Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed you meat and your drink. For why should he see your faces worsening than the children which you are of your sort? I mean, why would you worsen yourself, is what this guy says to him. Then shall you make me endanger my head to the king, and Daniel and his friends as well. Then Daniel said to Melzar, I'm a Christian. I do whatever I want. You can't boss me around. We got to be careful, right? Daniel said to him, verse 12, prove thy servants, I beseech thee. Prove us. Give us time. Give us 10 days. And let them give us pulse to eat, which says vegetables, right, in the ESV. It's basically a vegetarian diet. And water to drink. Verse 13. Then let our countenances be looked upon before you, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat. And as thou seest, deal with thy servants. This guy, hi brother, this guy risked everything, his life and all these choice Hebrew young men, and he says, so he consented to them in this matter, and he proved them 10 days. He gave them 10 days. Keep going. At the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer or more attractive, more and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Just 10 days. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and he gave them pulse, or he let them continue in that diet. Question number 3, what about your convictions? How far will you go with them? What about your conscience? How far will you stay with them? How will you walk with not trying to be contentious? How will you walk with not being proud? How do we deal with people we talk to? We try to evangelize. How do we relate to them? I mean, this is huge in its example to us. These men, starting with Daniel, their conscience would not allow them to enter into this Chaldean, Babylonian way of living. And so he had to make decisions. He had to express himself. He had to take a stand, and it was going to cost him life. You and I might lose a job. Big deal. Daniel would say, big deal. You might lose a friend in the neighborhood. You know what I mean by that. You're not trying to lose friends. You're not trying to get fired. But if your conscience is bound by the Word of God and truth and the Christian way of life, it's going to impact people, but it's going to impact them sometime in that they don't even understand. But here, how did Daniel walk in it? Well, he wasn't going to be moved from his convictions. It seems as though Daniel perceived the king's intention. The king's intention was to make them Babylonians, to make them pagans, if you want to put it that way. But Daniel's approach was not rebellion or pride, right? Wasn't full of pride. Wasn't full of rebellion. Daniel demonstrated humility in his commitment to abstain from the king's food. I'm not going to do that. But he didn't say it with pride. He didn't demand his rights. He didn't grandstand. He didn't take a position that would dishonor God. His conscience was bound by God, and his conduct was bound by God. It's beautiful when you think about this. You know, I told the Portland church that story about me blowing it that time, you know, 15 years ago with the neighbor and his daughter, and she rode that motorcycle thing across the back property. And anyway, and I went out and said, I yelled out, and I was frustrated. I didn't know what was going on. There were some things. I mean, y'all remember some of that story? Maybe not. This is before we then moved back to Denton. So this is the very late 90s. Next door neighbor and their daughter and motorcycle and the whole thing. When I yelled out in frustration, and then I looked over my shoulder, and there he was. And I realized he didn't like what I had said. I didn't curse or anything. I just was frustrated. I just thought, what is she doing? She's So I didn't know what to say at that time. The scene ended. I went in the house, and it wasn't 5 minutes. And I said to Krista, I can't leave it this way. I can't leave it that way. I've got to go over there and make this right with that guy. I had just met him. They hadn't been in the neighborhood long. This was out on like 1 or 1.5 acre lots. So it wasn't like it was a real dense neighborhood. And I went over and knocked on the door, and he came to the door, and I said, I just wanted to tell you I'm sorry. I spoke in a way that wasn't right. I just want to ask you to forgive me. That was okay. She wouldn't do anything. He didn't say a word. He's kind of, so I mean, at this point, I'm walking in my own conscience, and I have to walk in a way that's right before God. Daniel had to do this. The guy shut the door. I went back, and though I felt release in my spirit, felt the grace of God, I didn't feel real happy that he wouldn't even talk to me. It's just awkward, right? Doesn't feel good when you talk to your boss or a coworker. You have to take a stand, a client. Sometimes phone calls are not easy to make with people, meetings. But it happens. God's with us. We have to walk in these things. We're going to impact our generation. We have to walk with God. That's the theme here. That's what Daniel did. When 2 months later, the guys next door came over. He said, I got to talk to you. Okay. Went outside. His wife had left him. He said, I've got to talk to somebody. And all of a sudden, it hit me. God set the whole thing up that I could be here and learn to love him and listen to him and create more of a bond, a connection to him. And he did. He began to open up with me. But the point is, we want God to give us favor. If we're going to impact people that we're around, we've just got to walk with God in it. Not looking for big events. You know, everybody, this American idea, this big Christian evangelism, these big events, it's full of pride. It's full of man's techniques. The same men that go home and curse at their wives, hate their children, or walk in impure ways, watch the wrong things on TV, get the wrong things that they're about, their whole life is not permeated like Daniel's in these men. This is the way to live, right? This is the way to walk with God. If I can say it in a simple, this is the way you impact other guys around you, other men and other people. So he wasn't full of pride and he wasn't full of rebellion. He demonstrated humility. He had a commitment to abstain from certain customs. He makes an appeal. Realize, guys, this could have cost him his life. Like I said earlier, not a job, not a friendship. My best friend through high school, kind of, we had a real falling out 5 or 10 years into our adult life over the gospel, over the parable of the prodigal son. And Jesus using the picture of hell in that parable. A complete falling out over that truth. He and his wife could not buy it. Where there's been some restoration there, but at that point he'd had enough of Christianity. So this thing of what it costs, Daniel didn't pass or put away his conscience. He didn't. He walked with the Lord. He honored the supervisor over him. I mean, you've probably had to make an appeal before. If you haven't, get ready. You've probably had to make it, right? I've told y'all in the years ago the story of when I was earlier in my career, the firm I worked with did all of the plan reviews for every LDS, Latter-day Saints, facility in the United States. Every single new building, every single new development in the United States went through the firm I was with for quality control checking of all their plans and specs. Remember that story? Tom, you probably remember it. And so along the way, I was one in one division where we'd have to review. We had a whole checklist of how things had to be reviewed according to their requirements. And I wasn't in it long. I thought, I can't be a part of this. There was an electrical engineer. I said something to him, basically, I can't be a part. He was a true brother. So I decided to go to my supervisor. I mean, again, we're talking about walking in God's ways with our conscience bound by the truth, like Daniel. And I said to him, and I could hardly finish, and he said, I know exactly what you're trying to say. It couldn't have been more than 60 days later somehow. We're talking about a client that paid thousands of dollars a month, thousands to the company. Within, I think, 60 days or less, the whole contract got canceled. I don't even know what happened. I had no rank. I had no authority. I don't even know what happened. The whole contract got canceled. I think maybe even a few other Christians had appealed. We're not going to be a part of this. And so you and where you God has you, you're going to have to, there's going to be supervisors or people you work around are going to ask you to cheat, do things improper, right? Cover your tracks, do this. Negotiate a higher price. Don't put this in. We can't walk that way, right? We're his vessels. Here's the key point. He had the favor of God. He walked in God's ways. Daniel walked in a way that he would impact those around him. His character was blameless, and that laid the groundwork for the appeal. As I've already probably said, you cannot make an appeal or be effective in it if you have a rebellious spirit. You can't bring people to the truth if you're going to be proud and you're going to yell at them or fuss at them or gripe at them or try to belittle them because they don't know, understand the gospel. How can they understand the gospel? Their eyes are blinded. They will promote and back any idea out there in society if they're not brought into the truth. The billboard stuff that Mona Leiter sent to us this week. Staggering. The blindness about the whole abortion thing. How can it keep getting worse in its delusion? Well, it's worse than it was 30 years ago. But we can't hate those people. We have to appeal to them. We have to speak the truth to them. At first, the prince, he rejects or he's concerned about the idea, but Daniel proposes a plan. Let us eat, pulse, and drink water. And take a look at us after 10 days. This is a position of faith. And guys, there's no reason to do a dietary study of this one. Right? I'm serious about that. I'm not trying to make light of what we eat. I enjoyed our dinner just like you guys did. I think I overdid it a little bit, getting too excited, having fun with you guys. But the point is, Daniel was not trying to exalt a dietary choice over another. Daniel said, I've got to walk with my God, and therefore whatever I have, God will sustain me in. That's what he was saying. It's a position of faith. It's not one man's solution versus another man's solution. See how we look after 10 days. He did it by faith. If I honor God, God will honor what I do. That's a principle, right? He committed his welfare into God's hands. I could have been fired from the firm I was with, yes, when I told my supervisor, I can't in my conscience log another hour on the LDS client. That's what I said. Read between the lines. I could have been shown the door and released. But God was merciful in it. We can learn from Daniel's example of how to hold our convictions or walk in them. So we learn here, particularly in Daniel's example, that it's not a secondary thing when somebody's trying to take us into worldly indulgences, right? It's not a secondary thing. If the king said, you're going to live my way, it wasn't a secondary thing. It was a thing of holiness to him. Anything that distracts us from obedience and loyalty to God, we ought to take very seriously. I don't care what the next program they get for our timesheets at work. I cannot tell you how many programs in the history of my career we have to learn new timesheets. In one sense, you can pick up, it drives me crazy, but it's not that big of a deal. Somebody's got to log hours. An accountant's like my dad, my brother, and my sister. Somebody's making those decisions. I need to just go with it. But I can't go to a company event and get wasted. I can't go to a Ranger game with them and get drunk for the first time in my life just because I want to be cool like the rest of them. Everything that we're about, everything you're about, begins to crater when we take that approach. We can't. I couldn't go out with those guys at Winn-Dixie after stocking shelves and get drunk with Krista and that little boy at home. I couldn't. God owned me. I'm not my own. You see, there's a principle there. And we walk in that. It's glorious. It's the most liberated life there is to live. He's the most liberated police officer probably in Fort Worth, one of them. He who's watching for the good of mankind and protecting others, he has the great God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob for him. What a truth. You know how many officers, if I said, can I go meet 8 or 10 of your friends? If I went up to him and said, does Eric Byrd walk, you think, in the ways of Christ? I would love to hear them respond. It would be music to my ears. I'm convinced of that. Not because he's great, but Christ in him is great. You just walk with God in it. That'll impact this generation. Man, will it. So there's many things, brothers, around us that we have to be careful about. Right? There's many things around us to be careful about. There's worldliness in luxury. I mean, America, we're learning this. We're going to learn it from Randy Alcorn for about a year, if I run the chapters out. We're going to learn more and more about our American culture, which I'm in, you're in, we're all in, at one level or another. We're all in the richest group of humanity ever. But we have to be careful in that. We have to be careful in that. We have to walk with the Spirit. We have to be careful of luxury around us. Vain amusements. This is the conformity of our day. Vain amusements. Slick, well-polished, new ideology. Coming from sometimes theologians, so-called. We just have to be careful, right? We have to walk in the truth. We have to walk with our conscience bound by the truth. And we may not look like we're going to prosper on vegetables and water, right? You talk to very many probably Olympic athletes and say in your most intense training time, what all you have is basic vegetables and water, no proteins, nothing like that, no supplements. We're not talking about enhancement drugs. We're talking about certain food types, and they'd laugh and say, I cannot sustain what I do. Michael Phelps at his peak, but if I said, all you get is vegetables and water, can you do it and look better than the rest? He'd say, no, it's not possible. That's what happens here. Daniel does it. This is what John Calvin said. Although we should meet with nothing but roots and leaves of trees, and even if the earth herself should deny us the least blade of grass, follow him here, yet God, by his blessing, can make us healthy and active no less than those who abound in every comfort. How true. So the 10 days is over. We go to the last scene, verse 17. I'll move along here. How are we doing on time? Verse 17. And as for the four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. This is a statement right on the heels of Daniel, by faith, committing himself to Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king communed with them. Must have been like a banquet, right? Some sort of a gathering, who knows? Obviously, they wouldn't have been indulging themselves, but he communed, he talked with them. And among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. None were like them. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even into the first year of King Cyrus. Question number 4. What about, or does it really impact others at the personal level? Before we open up tonight and share in our hearts together about who we are and what we're to be about, does it really impact others how you live, how you walk? Yes, it does. Some nights I'm not here at this place with you guys. Some nights I'm at city council meetings between the highest elected official in that city. Sometimes it's large cities, mayors and council. How does Philip conduct himself? Right? How do we walk? How do we carry ourselves? Does it impact others? I think it did in Daniel and these guys' lives. It will in our lives. It already has in you guys' lives. Let it be an encouragement to you that you're his. They abstain for conscience sake. They get permission to abstain, and the blessing of God is mightily upon them. I mean, we're not talking about, they kind of looked even with everybody else, almost like the head of the eunuchs winked at them. I think you're hanging in there. They were marked in a better place. God did it. It's a miracle, really, when you think about it. They became, because of what God turned them, they became the most influential young men now in the kingdom. You guys, in your work and in your areas of your life, when you just walk with God, who knows, brothers, but you may become the most influential voice in those you're around. You may have supervisors or bosses or owners of company who look to hear from you more than people at a much higher rank than you're at. I had to be in an HR meeting a few months ago about a principal level person who they were going to part ways with. You're talking about an owner, and I had to be in the meeting to listen, and they're watching me. I think I may have shared this with you. And finally, the head of HR, it's quiet, and they've shared everything, and I'm over there hurting inside because I care for this guy. I could see that events were happening. And finally, she in the room said, "What are you thinking, Philip? You have all the other owners sitting there. What do I say to them?" I said, "It's just, these are hard things. These are people. These are things you care about. These are things that mean a lot to all of us, right? I mean, what do you say? God appoints that moment. God used it." In other words, I got a chance to comment where they could have asked 25 other people. What are you going to say? How do we walk? God should own that moment. He has it. These guys became the most influential young men in the kingdom. 10 days of water and vegetables. No, days and years already where God's on them. That's the truth of it right there. God advances their physical strength. It's in the text. The King James, they were fairer and fatter. What does it say again in the ESV about their appearance? Is that the word it used? Verse. Yes. Fatter in flesh. They were ruddy. They were strong. They were full. They had strength. Right? God did it. God had his men for that purpose and for his namesake in a pagan land in a day where everything was against them. What is our day to God? He gave them strength. As our days are, so shall our strength be. We got to run with God. We got to go with God. Sometimes I like to say to my grown children, my son-in-laws particularly, or my son, Jabin, I've got to keep running. I got to go hard. I got days to finish up. Right, brother David? We've got to be about that. Mac does. All of us. We got to go after the things that God has us to be about. We can trust him for strength. There's some days, and recently with my back and sleeping, and I've had a little bit more trouble. But the point is we can rest in God. He'll give us strength. God advanced their intellectual strength, their wisdom, their discernment, their perspective on things. The king trusted them 10 times more, or he thought they were 10 times greater. How do you explain that? God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom, it says in the text. They didn't get there on their own. God did it. Remember, David had said, I'm wiser than all my teachers, all those older than me. Quentin, you got to run after God today and forever. You got to let God own you. You got to be a marked man for him. That's it. John, you got to seek the Lord. You got to go with God. You guys that are younger, you've got to be a surrendered vessel. If God's going to impact this generation, he's going to do it with men who are sold out, who have yielded their life to him, like putting a flag on a pole. And they just let God blow that thing. Do it. God advanced them. So what King Nebuchadnezzar had arranged to conform these young men to a Chaldean way, what he had set up, God used it to prepare them or put them in the king's court so that the one true God would be declared and defended and things would begin to happen. It's not a secondary event. What the king intended with his practices, right? You're going to learn our way. You're going to learn our language. You're going to eat our foods. You're going to do what we do. All of it, God used it for his namesake. God had it all to impact Babylon. The story of Daniel is told throughout the world to this day. In a few hundred years, there won't be any conversation or less about Donald Trump on the pace he's at right now. And I don't say that because I hate him. But he doesn't walk with God. John F. Kennedy did not walk with God. He doesn't have a legacy of walking with God. And I'm not just picking on those men. I'm being very honest. Eugene Cernan, the guy I talked about, the last astronaut that ever walked on the moon. We don't know that he knew the living God. It doesn't appear that he did. Daniel did. He's talked about, thought about, written about, and learned from to this day because his God owned him. He impacted his generation because he was God's servant. God inundated the king's court with these guys, young men, younger than almost all of us in this room. It's an ironic turn, isn't it? It's an incredible turn of events. The king recognized the superior qualities of these young men, not because of what they did, because of their God. Oh, guys, nothing was forced by Daniel. God did it. So your position and your advancement of your life is in God's time and season. Let me close. There's a lot here. I know that we live in a wicked and pagan society. I get it. I understand that. Some days I feel as broken and grieved over it as you guys do. I got grandchildren now in this society. I mean, it's just unbelievable what all they can get access to so quickly. I understand. We're in a pagan, wicked day in America. It's bombarding you. It's bombarding all of us. But we must guard by the word of God, the truths of God. We must guard our mind and our life and our heart and all that we're about. We must guard ourselves and possess ourselves in honor before God and not go that way. We have to. We're not our own. We're instruments of his. We're his people. Okay. So that's how we walk. Second, therefore devotion, surrenderedness, a devoted life is a gospel proclamation. It's a living testimony that Christ is worth everything. This is what Piper, I think, is about. That Piper is the great treasure, right? That's probably his rallying theme for 40 years now. Christ is everything. He's the pearl of great price. Devotion to God is the most impactful thing that is lived out. Yes, the proclamation of the gospel, but I'm talking about holy men. Holy men. It impacts those around you at the grocery store or at your whatever trade you're in. I'm saying this because I think we all get caught up thinking we're really not doing anything to impact anybody. We can't think that way. It dishonors our great God and Savior to say that or think that. If Jason's going to be about translating the gospel to other peoples, think of what that means, like I tried to emphasize last Sunday. You talk about an impact. So therefore, in closing, there is nothing small about living according to conviction and principle. There's nothing small in that. Such things may be the primary way that God glorifies his name through you and sinners are turned. It's not small. Decisions over how what you reject, what you talk about, what you give yourself to, what you abstain from, what your convictions are, how you make an appeal, how you carry yourself day in, day out, is never small, brothers. Your life is a living testimony. We're not in any way to hold back. Amen.